You're very welcome along to the inaugural edition of Off the Top Rope, where Richie McCormack and I are going to take a look at wrestling at the moment. It is one of the few sports, I guess we should call it sports entertainment, that are still continuing beyond lockdowns across the world with the COVID-19 pandemic. We had Monday Night Raw take place this week, and Richie, let's be fair, two questions come out. What the hell is a boneyard match? And secondly, Were we just watching a pre-show for a pay-per-view this week?
I kind of realized that they're stuck in a certain pattern whereby they're in the Performance Center, which is in Florida, and there's only a certain amount of talent they can get in and out. And to be fair, they probably should be adhering to social distancing guidelines as well, which made the four-man booths during the tag match, the lengthy tag match that they had, whereby the Street Profits had joined both Byron Saxton and Tom Phillips at the desk. It was remarkably irresponsible in the current climate and should be reprimanded. But given the nature of the relationship between the Trump administration and the WWE and the McMahons, I don't think that's going to happen. I can see why they're doing certain things. It just, I don't know, it comes across as very, very light. And maybe they're just taking the foot off the pedal going, listen, we don't really have to put out all the stops in building up WrestleMania because we know it's going to be something of a damp squib this time around. But then there are other elements to their presentation that suggest that actually we want to put a bit of effort into this and we want to spread it out over two nights. So they're caught between two stools. I think they're getting it about as right as they could do in the circumstances. But there's still other bits and pieces that they could definitely tweak for sure.
Yeah, like I thought this week was a big improvement on the week before because we had a full Royal Rumble match shown a couple of weeks ago in order to just pad it out so they could make their 3-hour runtime. And maybe some lessons can be learned for WWE over the last few weeks as well. One of the key ones being that it's very difficult to fill a 3-hour show and keep it entertaining. And when it comes to the booth, like you mentioned, it was a 2-man booth for the best part with Todd Phillips and with Byron Saxton. I was actually quite happy when I didn't see Jerry Lawler walk out at the start. I much prefer a 2-man booth anyway.
Yeah, the thing about it was when they cut to, and we'll get to that in a moment as well, when they cut to that Mania match from 5 years ago, the triple, I know it wasn't a Rumble match, wasn't it?
Royal Rumble, yeah.
With Lesnar and Cena and Seth Rollins. And the first thing that jumped out at me was, oh Christ, JBL's on commentary. JBL is on commentary. No. And then Lawler chimes in, I'm like, no, this is terrible. Because, oh my God, Maggle. He's Big Match John. That was the last thing I wanted to hear.
It was also peak JBL as well, because when they were meant to be building up the show and telling some kind of story, JBL came out with his classic line, which sounded like it could be from the SmackDown versus Raw video games, when he goes, this match is going to be fun.
Yeah, and I remember distinctly hearing that as well, because I think I was a network subscriber by that stage, and I was making sure that I was getting the pay-per-views watched at least anyway, you know, to kind of keep tabs on what was going on. And that jumped out at me at the time. I was like, oh God, I despise that. There are many reasons why I dislike that man. His politics are one of them. The fact that he'll share photos of himself with Nigel Farage is another. I don't know if you've seen that one yet.
Or his search history when he's looking up muscular naked women while pay-per-views are on.
That has happened before. We're not just making that up for those watching in. JBL is a questionable character, to say the least. But yeah, I could do without him. I think the 2-man booth works well. I think Saxton and Phillips are fine. I don't think at this stage you want anybody intrusive or, I guess, stealing the show or being disinterested if you're looking to be JR over an AEW. I think they've gotten the commentary booth just a bit right. Now, no doubt they'll manage to foul that up by the time WrestleMania weekend rolls around in, 13, 12 days' time. But yeah, I think they're, as I say, generally, they're getting it about as right as they can given the circumstances.
Yeah, the other thing that's unusual is obviously we had the tagline, which they're using, which is a WrestleMania that's too big for one night for the first time ever and so on, to try and hide over the fact that they're going to have to pre-record vast swathes of this and it's for the best part going to be at a performance center with no fans there. Is that they seem to have no idea yet about the scheduling. And that came across in quite a few of the promos as well. More than once, I know AJ Styles definitely said this. He said, I don't care if I'm on the Saturday night or on the Sunday night. It just feels really weird.
It does. There's bits and pieces coming out that apparently Becky and Shayna are going to headline the Saturday night. But I think the fact that they've been forced through the cancellation of the Hall of Fame and NXT's takeover program essentially being moved to this Wednesday, they've said that they've basically done what they should have been doing anyway, because what we had the last few years, especially in the big stadium shows with Mania, were these like 7-8 hour long marathons, and I actually went from being envious of people who were attending Manias to almost feeling sorry for them, because how you could stick through that much match outdoors in a stadium with that many other sweaty people, and just there's no natural rhythm then to a show, because if you look back at an old pay-per-view, whether it's one of the old Starcades or something, or whether it's a Mania, there's a certain ebb and flow to it. You kind of have your up match, you bring people down with a bit of an entertainment or a bit of a comedy match, and then you kind of try and build them back up again towards a crescendo towards the finish. But you look at Mania matches, especially the main events in the last couple of years, you can see like this empty swathes of stadium where people are just kind of gone, oh, do you know what? I'm better off beating traffic, or I'm better off getting a subway out of here and heading home, or I'm better off, you know, just basically not entertaining this because I've been here for 8 hours. I'm knackered. So spreading it out over two nights, doing essentially what New Japan did with Wrestle Kingdom in January, this seems like the right idea, and maybe one that they might want to stick to. Like we talked about this on the news round on Monday or Tuesday night as well, about how the championship in football could find itself falling arse backwards into a situation that actually is going to be the most entertaining and what everybody would like to see, which is a straight knockout. And again, with WrestleMania, I think they've found a formula by which they can, you know, base WrestleManias going forward when they finally get them back outdoors.
Yeah, because even like watching on TV last year in terms of WrestleMania, you had your big emotional moment a few hours into the show. I think it was about 3 hours in, where Kofi Kingston wins, and there's a massive crowd interaction at that point, and you know, just a relief that a storyline has actually paid off. And the energy is just gone for the rest of the night. I think that really affected the main event last year. Like even rewatching it a few weeks ago, flat as a pancake for that all women's final match.
Even if you go back to like Mania 18, where the biggest scheduling mishap they had ever was
Rock Hogan in the wrong place.
After Rock and Hogan, which like everybody just wanted to see. That was the main attraction for everybody there. Nobody gave fiddlers because A, the story wasn't that strong anyway. And B, I think everybody was already at that thought of Triple H as being part of the creative team, and that he wanted to have the spotlight and go out last, and that was all his call, yada yada yada, and they paid for it big style that night. But I think Mania is too long and has been for a couple of years, and last year I think was the most piss takery of its durations, and I think they've finally found a way to get it right, albeit completely by accident, and it gives a chance for everybody to shine. I mean, when they talk about multiple headliners, like nobody ultimately cares about maybe one or two of the three headliners that they announce. Whereas now, if they come out next week and say Becky and Shane are a headline on the Saturday, we'll have Goldberg and Roman Reigns headline on the Sunday, you've got something for everybody to point towards there, and you've got something to build around, and as I say, an ebb and flow to kind of build up throughout the course of the pay-per-view.
Yeah, the only thing, I guess, before we start breaking down the show from Monday night is, it is going to be very unusual. I know we are kind of getting a little bit conditioned for this in terms of what we've seen the last few weeks, just filling out Raw and SmackDown, and it's been true of NXT without a crowd as well. Without that crowd interaction, which is fairly key to WrestleMania, do we almost put an asterisk beside WrestleMania that this isn't even going to feel like one?
Yeah, I do. I know I'm speaking to you in the office about it last week. You're kind of like, oh, it's going to be fine. But it's not the same. You need that crowd interaction. You need the sense of big story arcs paying off and the crowd reaction to go along with that. And there just isn't that sense when, like, you could hear at one point last night that during the commentary when Street Profits were on the desk, they were essentially shouting down. Zelina Vega was having a back and forth between the two of them. We were like, that shouldn't happen. Like, in fairness, it was entertaining. But you're going to lead a lot of moments like that whereby there's more interaction and more awareness that they are in a strange situation and the reasons for it to make this actually work. But I don't think it could do. Like, we'll get to what the Boneyard match will probably mean in a minute. But yeah, it needs a lot of creativity to pull this one off.
Yeah, I suppose one of the people who would probably be very affected by the non-WrestleMania pop will probably be Drew McIntyre. It seems he's being built up to take away Brock Lesnar's title. There is that possibility they could swerve this now, maybe because of circumstance, and give him his payoff moment further into the future. But everything you see in the story is indicating towards a Drew McIntyre win over Brock.
Yeah, but I don't know how you do that without making McIntyre look like a complete tart. But I guess last night's show opened with a recap of McIntyre's last few weeks, where he eliminated Brock Lesnar at the Rumble. But he admitted in a package that Brock is a dominant figure in the roster while using his awful Gerard Butler mid-Atlantic accent. He says at WrestleMania he'll take care of the reigning, defending, undisputed heavyweight world champion. The show proper then opens with Brock and Paul Heyman already in the ring. No introduction for them. The hard camera, as we know, and this is a good call, is now facing the entranceway, because the last week or two we'd had this weird still pretending that we have a crowd. The Austin Watt thing the other week kind of showed that. Heyman as well is in the ring. He says, we live in uncertain times and Brock is the certainty that we need. Drew can train all he wants, spar with mixed martial artists, but he cannot beat Brock Lesnar. He can get down on his hands and knees, but God's prayer line is going to give you a busy signal right now, which is a killer line by Paul. Brock will make it quick, but he won't make it painless, he says. He says Drew McIntyre is going to main event for years to come because of what he did to Brock Lesnar already. But ultimately, he is just another wannabe that got, and this was phrase was new to me, douched out by Brock Lesnar.
Yeah, it didn't feel very Heyman. Like, I'm sure he, given his creative position on Raw, he probably did write this promo for himself. And to be fair, I enjoyed the promo. The only thing about it is, it feels like I've seen this since the Royal Rumble, that this is just the same story repeating week after week after week. And I do
feel like, yeah, I feel like I've seen this since Heyman came back with Lesnar. Like, it's basically, that's it. And you're like,
yeah.
Oh, God, will he be? Probably, but okay, go on. Go on your spiel. And all, there was like, when you cast your mind back to when Heyman came back with Lesnar, there was so much goodwill towards seeing him there again. You're like, oh, class, Paul Heyman. Paul Heyman's cutting Paul Heyman promos. And you're like, he's still one of the best ever on the microphone. But Jesus, like, it needs to go away for a while to actually make it special, or give him another client to deal with to make it work. Because with the Lesnar and him, the dynamic, I think, is just it's played out.
What about Drew McIntyre then? Because as Drew Galloway, when he went back onto the indies and started to build his name back up again after, I guess, a kind of his run in WWE had really died before he went on the indies, he was more of a kind of a menace for the best part, and oftentimes was put in the kind of heel persona when he was on the indies. I'm not entirely sure about white meat babyface Drew McIntyre.
Yeah, nor am I. The stink of his previous run and the three-man band thing is still there for me. I don't think it's as pronounced as when they tried to make Jinder Mahal the world champion, just basically to get massive TV viewership figures in India, even though the guy's from Canada. But with McIntyre, like, he seems to have gotten over to a degree. Like, the fans from, you know, the previous attended shows seem to be buying into what he's doing. They certainly did at the Rumble. I just, for my tastes, I'm kind of like, yeah, it's Vince trying to make it happen again, and I'm not sure it really works. Maybe it is the Jared Butler accent that stops me. I don't know if that's just me, because he sounds like he's halfway between the, you know, it's just, I will kill you, Brock Lesnar. I will make sure. It's like a really bad Connery.
Yeah.
I will make sure you're 6 feet on the ground following WrestleMania. It's just, I don't know. There's something about him that doesn't click with me. He seems to be getting over in the States. I actually, like, I can only wish him well, because to come from where he did, where he left that company, just as nothing, really. Like, he'd been built up so much, left without barely a squeaky fart, and then went and remade himself back in Scotland and here to a degree as well, to be fair, with ODT. And has made something of himself and is kind of viewed in that light again, and that's brilliant. But for me, the storyline should pay off with him beating Brock at WrestleMania. As you mentioned it there, they could swerve and say no, because it won't mean as much in front of feck all fans. How do you go and celebrate that in front of nobody? But they can't make him. Like, I was listening to a couple of podcasts about WrestleMania 10 recently, and they're talking about Lex Luger losing to Yokozuna in the first of the two championship matches at 10. And it basically just put the rubber stamp on how awful Luger's run in WWE was, despite the fact that they positioned him as, this guy is going to be our world champion, this guy is the next Hulk Hogan. They just completely did him over by, I guess, the SummerSlam DQ, and then with the non-finish, really, I guess, at Mania, whereby he just lost to Yoko from interference from Mr. Perfect. You could have something like that again, and if that does happen, it could really, really kill McIntyre again as a viable option at the upper point of the card. But there's enough from Heyman's promo that suggests this guy's going to be around for a while in the upper echelons of the card, so I guess we better get used to it.
Yeah, and I guess, look, WrestleMania 10 is a cautionary tale in and of itself in terms of the Luger push, because there was a point that these guys were hiring out a bus and putting him in a trip all around America, and they were using former war boats in order for him to do the Yokozuna challenge and so on. They were absolutely all in on Lex Luger at one point, and then when they decided to pull the plug, they pulled it pretty quickly.
What I love about the Luger thing, especially when you listen to, it was Bruce Pritchard's podcast broke this down pretty well, about how when they sent him out on the bus, that when he's going to glad hand the American people and be I'll be your hero, as the song says, that he just didn't have the personality to pull it off. But I was kind of thinking, surely by that stage you've had him, he was in the family essentially. There's a promo from him at Mania 8. He appears at Mania 9. It's the source. So you've had him for about a year and a half. And at no point did you realize this lad is a wet blanket and at best a natural born heel. There is no point in ramming him down the throats of people as a babyface, unless you're as just pig thick as Vince McMahon is and was at the time. But like, they should have copped on before he sat in that bus that wasn't going to work. But here we are.
Well, we can talk about some other people who McMahon seemed to be really hot on a few months ago and who've disappeared down the card, in Ricochet and also Alexander, who came out to tag together a little bit later on in the show. But where we go from this is directly pretty much from a promo into quite a lengthy former match from 5 years ago, that Royal Rumble main event, the triple threat match with Seth Rollins and John Cena in there with Brock Lesnar. And the thing that was kind of strange, because I taped it on BT Sport and watched it earlier today, is that they took 3 ad breaks in the middle of this as well. it screams filler.
I think it was the majority, because I'll be honest, I didn't watch it on BT Sport. I watched it through nefarious means, which had all the ads taken out, which meant that it was a 2-hour and 2-minute show. And I was trying to work out what would have been the breaks of the hours. And this took up the majority of the first hour's worth of programming for the USA broadcast. And I'm like going, Jesus, lads. Like, including entrances, including celebrations, yada, yada, yada. I think it was like 35 minutes.
It was a much longer match than I remember. Yeah. I kind of remembered like Brock going on the offense early on. Loads of German suplexes. I didn't remember the amount of slow movements throughout that match that there were.
Yeah, and they chose to rebroadcast that. I think what rammed home was how long Rollins has actually been at the top of the card. I don't think anyone would have presumed, oh, he's been there 5 years. You still kind of think of him as somebody who's been knocking around as a contender for, what, 2-3 years? But no, here we are. It's 5 years of Rollins mania, baby. We moved on from that because I'm only too willing to move on from a five-year-old match. Rob Gronkowski, a recap of his debut on SmackDown, where he was announced as host for WrestleMania, and he made a match between King Corbin and Elias. Rob Gronkowski was some of the worst dancing I've ever seen in human history.
Yeah, I didn't see SmackDown last week, so this is the first time I actually saw Gronkowski on the TV broadcast. I thought they made him look like an absolute goof.
I don't think they made him look like an
absolute
goof.
Maybe he is a goof.
I think that's the problem. Any man who is a mate of Mojo Rawley's, you kind of question anyway as being altogether. And yeah, having, like, this guy's won, what, 3 Super Bowls? He's a massive figure, lineman in American football. People are going to shit all over him from a height if he does anything. And I think he is one of the main beneficiaries of this mania being in front of no fans, because if they sent him out in front of 70,000 people in Tampa to do what he's probably still going to do anyway next week, he will be in serious trouble in terms of reaction. And I don't think he has it between the ears to deal with massive smark booing. I don't think he's got that about him yet. I mean, we can probably find out, but yeah, he's going to benefit from there being nobody in that building once Mania comes around.
I think, look, he suits Vince McMahon's taste perfectly. He's a big former NFL tight end. He's still probably young enough to do a bit more if he gets into
dance,
the business.
Dance, Gronk, dance. Make the people smile.
Gary Spivey, wow.
Oh, wow, look at the striation.
But aside from that, I don't think there's a whole lot about Gronkowski, really. No. Apparently, he's going to have a match, or at least be in a tag team match at SummerSlam. So I presume that's going to build towards that. But the minute I saw Gronkowski as well, I was thinking, there's another match which has just been added. So the one thing I do wonder, because we'll talk about the Lashley match being added a bit later on this show as well. Even though we're going with 2 nights, this card is getting bigger and bigger and bigger with things that almost feel unnecessary. I have no need to see Corbin against Elias.
They are just, sorry, my eldest lad's just coming in. Do you want to say hello on the camera? We're doing a wrestling podcast, Dara. There's Dara. Look at him there.
How are you doing?
Being all handsome. That's Will. We're talking about wrestling. Okay. I'll be in to you in a minute. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Yeah. This is the first time that's happened, Will, by the way.
We're keeping this in.
Broadcast online. Yeah, we're definitely keeping this in. So you're going to be on YouTube. Dara's already a YouTuber. Do you want to give out your YouTube now handle?
Subscribe to me on DMC11, please.
DMC11, there you go. The man will be back online. He's a YouTube superstar.
The kid can cut a promo.
He is. He can cut a promo. Yes, where were we?
The fact they just keep on adding more matches, Richie. Like, yeah, that's
like, you can see why they're doing it, because they want people to actually watch. And but there's no, like, umpteen Mania matches have had this problem beforehand. It used to be a massive WCW problem, actually, whereby they just have matches for the sake of matches involving people you don't really care about and they don't even have an issue. This is one of them where you're kind of like, going, all right, Grant, they're throwing Lashley together. Who? All right, fine, yeah, I'll watch that. And the, you know, they actually made a fist of making the tag matches matter. The tag match in particular involving Street Profits matter, but yeah, they're just adding matches for the sake of it because they've got two nights to fill now.
We moved on then to the AJ Styles Undertaker kind of, this is the story they seem to be really focusing on as well, even though it might not be one of the two main events. I think this is going to be the co-main event among the nights.
I think it definitely will be. AJ Styles' issue with Undertaker is what we recapped on, a package showing AJ saying Taker should have retired a decade ago, which I think we can all agree with. For some reason, AJ is hammering home that Michelle McCool is the reason for Taker still going. Undertaker, we see last week, battering Gallows and Anderson. It seems that the lights being turned out makes Undertaker move faster out of the ring than he does with the lights on in it. For the first time, I think that for the first time on TV, it's definitely one of the first, because it's very unusually happened, AJ calling Taker by his real name, Mark. We get the full entrance treatment from Gallows and Anderson alongside AJ for the first time in WrestleMania history. AJ says it's just too big for one night. It's been set the case for a while, as we said. He doesn't care if it's Saturday or Sunday, but maybe the Undertaker cares because Michelle McCool might let him out of the house. And there's some really corny stuff about Undertaker wearing maternity pants and looking like Dog the Bounty Hunter. They recap Undertaker's video of a tiger rescue sanctuary, which is a real thing that actually exists, and I recommend that people watch it. Ever since the streak was ended, says AJ, he hasn't been the same. I wanted to take his soul, but Michelle McCool beat me to it. I don't get what the obsession is, unless she's going to punk him out somehow during the match, which has got to be what this is building to.
Yeah, she has to be involved in some way.
I don't want the Mark Calloway that's posting selfies. Ooh, behind the curtain, AJ. I want the Undertaker, but he's nowhere to be found. So he suggests a Boneyard match. Give me Boneyard or go to hell, as Bart once said in The Simpsons.
Yeah, like, I mean, to me, Boneyard always kind of reminds me of The Lion King, where Simba goes off the beaten track and ends up with the hyenas. I'm kind of worried that's the kind of thing they're going for here.
Yeah, do you know what this is going to be? Because when I saw they were going to be pre-recording it, and they have to, because they don't know what talent is going to be available and what travel restrictions are going to be imposed, and that's absolutely fair. And Rey Mysterio actually is one of those people who is apparently in lockdown at the minute. But this is one of the ones that they're going to film somewhere else. This is one of the ones that they're going to do like a Broken Hardy's compound kind of match. And like, we're not going to get a match, we're going to get a brawl, we're going to get AJ, who, it's been pointed out by several people, hasn't been involved in much brilliant activity over the last while. He's either carrying an injury or he's purposefully slowing down himself.
I think he got injured at the Royal Rumble. Because he got thrown out by Edge, which seemed like that was actually a last second decision. I think he went down pretty hard on that spear he took.
Yeah, so like, I mean, that would, this kind of match would absolutely cover up for all those shortcomings. So, it's going to be one of those outdoor, I'm going to beat you with a shovel, I'm going to throw muck in your face, and ultimately Michelle McCool is going to save the day for The Undertaker, and they're going to leave arm in arm. I mean, if we learned anything over the course of The Undertaker's 30-year run now, it's you don't mess with his wife, because he had Sarah involved previously. She had her name tattooed on his neck for a while, which has ultimately got to be covered up. And he since ended up with one of the former divas. But yeah, like, we're going to end up with a lovely shot of Michelle McCool and The Undertaker on one of the nights of WrestleMania with their arms aloft, possibly with that rescue tiger. I don't know, but I sure hope so. Much like the Anastasia in The Simpsons.
Reminded me, by the way, of the horrible DDP angle that they used when they brought him in 2001, where they turned a guy who was a legit main eventer in WCW into a stalker.
Yeah, and he was like, he was a man of the people, wasn't he, when he was in WCW? Yeah. He was like the fans' representative in the ring, and he'd go out and celebrate with them, and everybody did the DDP bang. And Oh god, yeah, and they ruined him. He turns up, by the way, I don't know if you've seen this, in the there's one of the Untold documentaries that they have up on the network, looking back on the match that involved Dennis Rodman and Karl Malone in 97 in WCW, and it's actually really well done. They get in Rodman as a talking head, DDP, and his exceptionally white teeth are there as a talking head.
Those veneers do sparkle.
They do. Eric Bischoff and his complexion that says he has been drinking a lot of beer over the last 20 years is on there as well. And Hogan too, and they kind of go back through it, and it's like, you think about it now, I guess, like, I would have seen WCW only through flicking through like PWI and Paraslam back in the late 90s, because we didn't have any of the channels that carried it. But I remember seeing this and going, Jesus Christ, they've gotten like basketball players. But I don't think it had even the resonance that it, like, if, can you imagine post playoffs, say Kawhi Leonard and Steph Curry getting involved in a match at WrestleMania or summer, like, it just, you'd be like, no, that wouldn't happen. They get retired people in, or they get, you know, people who are at the end of their run or whatever, or they get Shaq to do nothing.
Pac-Man Jones, yeah. Do you remember that?
Oh god,
who, yes, was banned from football when he was a TNA wrestler.
Yeah, so yeah, that's the kind of thing, like, you get lower level people, or you get, but you never get two of the biggest stars in another sport in it. Like, how they pull that off.
Money
is absolutely remarkable. I know it's money, but on the
it's
other
still
hand,
impressive.
You have to get, like, surely they would have had to get like the Bulls and the Jazz to okay this on some level, unless they're just completely free agents and say, like, it's grand, I'm going out wrestling after the playoffs, don't worry about me, lad.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, it's fantastic, worth a watch if you have the network, and I think the network's actually free without wanting to do advertising for them. They're encouraging new subscriptions because everybody's at home and it's something to watch.
Yeah, and I think they've made a lot of their back catalogue available to people as well. They put a lot of stuff up on YouTube the last, yes, few days as well, so there's plenty to be watched there. In terms of Undertaker and AJ Styles, I have to admit, yeah, I quite like this version of AJ Styles. He reminds me more of the kind of intentionally goofy heel that he was in TNA. Like, he even knew that he was absolutely hamming up that promo entirely this week as well, and I know it was kind of a bit childish, the whole kind of diaper thing and the maternity clothing and so on, but still, this is kind, yeah, of classic AJ of about maybe 10 years ago. Himself and the club seem to really enjoy themselves. The club aren't going to AEW purely because I think they enjoy hanging out with AJ Styles.
They enjoy hanging out with him, and they're well paid, to be fair, as well. I think that's part of it. And I don't think their schedule is particularly grueling. And, you know, fair play to them. They can do what they want. They've kind of earned their stripes in Japan and elsewhere before coming to WWE. I don't know. There's something about it was just too corny for me. We're veering towards the death rattle of Claire Lynch in TNA. I don't know if you remember that, whereby there was this actress that they'd hired because she was playing Olive Oil, I think, or she was playing some character on the Disney lot,
right,
when they were filming down there, and they got her involved in a paternity angle.
Yes, the baby
AJ
isn't
Styles,
yours,
AJ. One stage,
yeah, I remember that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And at one stage, it involved a little dolly with the AJ Styles hoodie on it. I was like, oh god. And it was the nadir, absolute nadir for that era TNA. But that's the kind of AJ storyline that I'm reminded of with this, and I don't really like it. But again, we're going to get a brawl, we're going to get muck, and we're hopefully going to get Tiger, touch wood.
Yeah, does it affect the Undertaker a bit that, like, this guy has been the king of kayfabe for the best part? Usually if you bring the Undertaker out of character, they did so when the TV cameras were off. They have absolutely pulled down the fourth wall this time.
Yeah, they have. I think it's about time, to be honest. I think the dead man stuff can only last so long. They can have little flex of it here and there, lights go on, lights go off, suddenly a man's there, suddenly a man's not. But I think you're insulting people's intelligence now. There is a man behind that character. The Broken Skull sessions that he did with Austin, the kind of lengthy one-on-one interview, it's really good. He gets called Mark a lot in that, and it's just, I guess, a change and a decent and a pleasant one to see him being referred to as a normal person.
Then we get to see the Street Profits. We get a kind of a slight vignette about the fact that we're going to see Andrade and Angel Garza, yeah, against the Street Profits. To be honest, I really like the Street Profits. I particularly like one half of them. I think Montez Ford has upper mid-carder / main eventer written all over him. He probably has to pack on a little bit more muscle, but
yeah,
this guy's going to be a star. I guess Angelo Dawkins is going to be the Marty Jannetty, but Montez, I can see, really going on to be strong.
I don't know. Angelo Dawkins can just sit there and go, yeah, fam, I see you, fam. That's great, fam. Which he did a lot during the course of this match because they're on commentary. But yeah, like, Montez is too skinny for Vince to ever take him seriously as that kind of thing, which is what I guess Eddie Guerrero had the same problem, I guess, when he signed in 2000. Apparently Vince looked at him and was like, he's so small. And then by the end of his run, by the time he died, unfortunately, Guerrero was one of his favorite acts. Now, unfortunately, Eddie Guerrero had to pile on the pounds via the use of steroids to get there.
Yeah.
But he built himself up, and I think Montez Ford probably has the capacity to do that a little bit, but very entertaining. They're on commentary for this match. Angel and Andrade tag in and out on Ricochet, basically get heat on him. Nice moves in there, like a nice sunset flip and dropkick combo on Ricochet. There's a hot tag to Cedric, who unleashes on Garza. All the way through this match, by the way, some incredibly stiff chops. With the thing of having no crowd there, one thing is they have to have a lot of talking in the booth because they have to mask the fact that they're going to be hearing some calls in the ring, which is fair enough. But also, because there's no crowd, you kind of have to make things even more snug than you would, because you can't have a crowd mask nothingness. So the amount of stiff chops and the amount of stiff kicks during the course of this match was fantastic. It was a back elbow from Andrade, finished it despite what looked like a stalled and kind of a botched pin. Then we get a brawl between Street Profits and Andrade and Garza to conclude the segment, setting up their match at Mania. Apparently it's one of those last minute ones as well. Andrade was supposed to be facing Rey Mysterio at Mania, but Rey is apparently on lockdown. So we're going to get Profits from two young lads from NXT next, Shane Thorne and Brendan Vink, I think, with the names I got there.
Yeah.
They look like chumps. They look like they've got nothing going on at the minute. Montez going corner to corner, delivering chops along the way. They get the heat on Montez, do the two lads from NXT before Dawkins is tagged in, cleans house, and ultimately leads to a cash out with like one of the most beautiful frog splashes I've seen. And they allow him to do it properly. The one thing I always recall when they brought in Eddie and they brought in Van Damme was there was a clear instruction, because I'd seen them both prior. There was a clear instruction to them: when you execute the frog splash, sell the impact of it yourself.
Yeah.
And it always used to piss me off because it just delayed what was a cool move. And you're just like, no, just let them bloody well pin from there. It looks grand. So they've dropped that entirely from Montez. It's basically up in the air, straight down, pin, bang, 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 and we're out. And it was, for what it was an entertaining match. I have to say, the Andrade Garza Street Profits match was really entertaining. For what it was great. They didn't have much respect for me because I think they joined it just after the start of it. And there's no crowd, obviously, for reactions, but there's a lot there. Garza's fantastic. Andrade's fantastic. And Ricochet and obviously Cedric Alexander are great, even though they're clearly not much and well thought of in the office right now.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, it's easy to forget that we had Ricochet in a world title bout not that long ago, and he has disappeared down the card. Cedric Alexander was in a feud with AJ Styles just the other side of Christmas, and he disappeared from TV pretty much around the Royal Rumble time as well. These were two guys who I think Paul Heyman was quite hot on, but it seems maybe others backstage weren't as hot on them. Obviously, they have their limitations probably outside of their work in the ring, but no great surprise when you need to put on decent matches, they go to the guys who clearly have the work rate here.
Yeah, and that's fair enough. I was going to say a bit of a surprise, but not really when you consider the two, Vink and Thorn, are probably knocking around from NXT anyway. They're probably in the facility, and they brought them in to give them a TV match. We moved on from there to some 24/7 content, YouTube footage from the weekend of Riddick Moss, who is the most nondescript wrestler I've seen this side of umpteen WCW signees in 2001. He's out jogging, topless, while wearing the 24/7 belt. I ask you, Will, why doesn't he just leave it at home if he doesn't want to defend it?
It's because actually
the belt's not on him.
It's a really good way of defending your title. Just leave it somewhere where people can't get to it and try and pin me in the street. I don't have my title with me.
Exactly.
Bringing a referee.
A car miraculously pulls up alongside with a ref, fully dressed in ref uniform inside. Moss, as he's wont to do, asks him what he's doing there. Then R-Truth pops out of the boot as a roll up from behind and the pin. Nice throwaway line at the end as well from Truth. Says, go back to football, Mr. Randy Moss. And then drives off with the belt and leaves the poor ref apparently stranded in God knows where. So this ref's going to have to tumble lift home or get a cab from somewhere, maybe put in a call. He's been used and abused, and Riddick Moss basically has to surrender that 24/7 title. Grand throwaway stuff, fun for what it is, I guess.
Yeah, it's fine. These segments as well, if they're going to use some of the WrestleMania, which I assume they will, can all be quite easily pre-recorded and just peppered throughout the action as well. And Ron Killings at this stage he's given his time to the business. I think he's very good at the comedic stuff anyway.
He is,
I think this division suits him.
I'm absolutely fine with him. That's basically, it should be built around him, insofar as what it is, and it's grand. We get more serious then with Shayna being interviewed, sat inside a darkened ring by Charlie Caruso. I don't know if you spotted this, Will, but they place Shayna's chair closer to the camera to make her look bigger than she is and infinitely bigger than Charlie. I'm not saying that they're close in height, but it was like, all right, I've got bad depth perception and one working eye, but even I can tell you what you've done here. They tried to have an interview. How do you intend to conduct yourself as champion? Asked Charlie. There's no answer. Another question, again, no answer. And Shayna says, you look nervous, Charlie. Why are you nervous? Are you afraid I'm going to bite? And Charlie asks, what Becky should expect at WrestleMania is to lose, which is one of the most Arnie lines I think I've heard in a while. But yeah, there's something about her, like her presentation and her action in the ring, I actually enjoy her thoroughly as a performer. I think interviews is where she falls down, not because she can't deliver, but her voice isn't menacing enough for the performer that they want her to be. And I don't know if that's a fair criticism or what, but it basically, it doesn't pay off. You want somebody who's going to sound not like Luna Vachon, but heading there. You know?
Yeah, I suppose this is kind of one of the difficult transitions from NXT to the main roster as well, where Shayna Baszler realistically didn't have to do a huge amount of talking when she was on NXT. She could just be a menace, just purely in terms of her record and in terms of her physicality in the ring. Understandably, if you go up and in all likelihood, she's probably going to be holding the belt after WrestleMania and the company's being somewhat carried because of the amount of respect they've given the women's division in the last couple of years. I do wonder about Baszler, whether she's going to be good enough on the mic for that role. As you say, it's not necessarily her actual promo skills that are the problem. She just doesn't seem to have that kind of menace that fits her character, which could be a problem.
Becky jokingly called her a charisma black hole, and with a lot of promos where Becky's been given leeway to kind of say things and they're kind of, you're able to spot them, that was one of the ones where I was like, oh, apparently, if you our boy Rovert on twitter.com was saying before that Becky's been quite I don't know if unhappy is the word, but not necessarily entirely pleased with creative and what's been put her way over the last while. That triple threat match that these two were involved with a while back, I don't think went down well with McMahon backstage. I don't think any party involved in it was either that happy with it as well. I wouldn't expect, you know, fireworks from this one. I don't think they're a good blend. I think there's hope definitely for Baszler down the line. I just think it's, something about it just doesn't click for me. I liked her in NXT. I liked her where she was. I thought she was the perfect follow-on champion from Asuka in a completely different way, a dominant figure off whom everybody else can bounce. But there's something about this isn't working for me. I hope they prove me wrong. And again, if they're going to get one of the headline slots, probably on Saturday, there's a lot expected of them, and I hope they can deliver. The end of the segment obviously comes with Shayna saying that she's going to destroy Becky Lynch. Out of nowhere comes Becky with a chair and takes her out, which the longer this goes on suggests that Shayna's walking out as champion.
Yeah, I'd imagine so at this stage. Plus, I think it's been a fairly directionless year for the best part for Becky Lynch. She's been holding that title now for coming up on a year at this stage. They very quickly took the SmackDown belt away when she was Becky Two Belts, and she's held this one on, but they've never really had any great direction. Like, she's got messed up in Charlotte Flair kind of rivalries, and then they're friends again, then they're in the tag team picture. She had Lacey Evans chasing the belt for a little while after she was champion as well. I just think, again, Becky has probably been let down by creative more than anything else here, because we saw what she was like 12 months ago.
The rosters seem uneven, I think, in a way at the minute, especially when you see someone like Sasha Banks just being a side woman for Bayley at the minute on the SmackDown roster. You're like, you're better than this. And you're looking at the Raw side and you're like, what really is there either as well? It's a strange one. It's a very strange one. They need to handle it better. I think the way they've handled Asuka and Kairi Sane and lumbering them with the tag belts, which means they go back and forth, but it also means that they're not really involved in anything concrete and substantial. I think her match with Becky was great, going back to Mania. I think the build to that was fantastic. I think there's a lot of respect and friendship between the two of them behind the scenes, so that was always going to work out. It's where Baszler fits into all this, is a major question. And does it harbinge the return of Ms. Rousey? Because somewhere down the line, she is going to pop her head back up. It was pointed out that she's looking in fine fettle at the minute. She's looking like she's ring ready. So I don't know if a return is that far off for Ronda Rousey.
Maybe there's a lot of talk, Richie, for a while that this was going to be the kind of four horsewomen against the four former Cage Warrior fighters, and that hasn't obviously come around for this WrestleMania. But you'd imagine that Rousey is a ready-made competitor to come in to actually face Shayna Baszler. That story pretty much writes itself.
Yeah, it absolutely does. Yeah, the reason they couldn't really go down the four horsewomen route is because the other two are, well, one in particular is just an absolute black hole in terms of charisma, and I'm not sure about their in-ring ability, and Rhea Shafir and Jesmyn Duke. There's just there's nothing there, and I don't know if there's much hope for them down the line in NXT. And again, that's not going to build a believable program, and it would just be based around Shayna and around Ronda. They've done a fantastic job in building Baszler as kind of a threat, but again, it's the charisma element is going to be the problem here. Speaking of which, we're next up to Aleister Black. He's into the ring. My question for you about Aleister Black, Will, is the other way he rises up out of nowhere from the side of the stage.
Yeah.
Has he just been lying there for the entire duration of the show?
Yeah, it is a wonder, isn't it? Has he been there for the 2.5 hours pretty much before this match? And it's, again, another thing you have to really suspend your disbelief on, was this idea that he was literally sitting in a room for multiple weeks before somebody knocked and then complained that he wanted to fight. It's like, mate, just go out and find somebody then. No one knows you're there. Lazy.
Just pick up the phone.
How do you get from city to city if you're in this room?
You got to get out on Instagram. You got to make yourself known, man. But like, yeah, he arrives up out of nowhere. Presumably he's been lying there for the entire duration of the show. I'm wondering why they're showing a half an hour long match from a 5-year-old Rumble. He approaches his opponent, an unnamed jobber, before sitting down cross-legged. Basically, his opponent tries to unload a kick. Black dodges, ultimately returns to his feet. And like the Chuck Norris that he is, roundhouses the lads to a quick defeat. And we learn that it will be Lashley versus Aleister Black for God knows why. At WrestleMania.
Yeah, and Aleister Black's kind of a strange one as well, Richie. He hasn't wrestled a huge amount over the last year since he was called up to the main roster, but they've kept him pretty protected. I think he's only got like one defeat in terms of a singles match. That was AJ Styles. Aside from that, they have him pretty much go out and crush everybody week on week on week. He obviously had a good NXT run before he went up to the main roster as well. But again, I get the feeling this is a case of let's give Bobby Lashley and Aleister Black a paycheck to fight in the night.
Yeah, absolutely. And they've kind of gone up and down with Aleister Black. They had that short-lived tag team with him and Ricochet. They've toyed with him being a singles performer. They've drew him back and had those room segments, and then they put him back out there to a degree again. They just need to pull the trigger on him. He's quite good on the mic. He's Dutch, for those who don't know. He's a decent enough talker. I remember hearing Kurt Bauer talking about him when he was Tommy End back in the day on the indies, and the performer that he could be. He mentioned at the time that he could be the natural replacement for someone like CM Punk. He kind of has a similar vibe to him, and it's not just the cross-legged sitting thing. But I'd like to see more from him. I'd like to see him talk. I'd like to see him in a meaningful program, and I'd like to see him do away with a lot of the spooky sitting up out of nowhere kind of stuff, because in the immortal words of George Harrison, it's been done. We're told that Rollins is live next, but instead it's Kevin Owens in the ring. He says, Seth, I've heard you're here tonight. Come on, Monday Night Messiah. Out comes Rollins in a rather fancy looking leather jacket, as we said. Nice little collar on it. One glove as well, stylish. He says, Kevin, do you believe the fighting in this building gives you home field advantage? You earned your job here in this building, but do you understand how you got that opportunity? This building was built on my blood, sweat and tears, my sacrifice. None of this exists without Seth Rollins, says Mr. Lynch. He brings up his track record at Mania, which is impressive, to be fair, and says Owens has no track record at Mania. He says, you weren't even good enough to be on last year. He says, under pressure, I become a god. Hell of a promo from Seth, to be fair. It feels like one that I've heard before, but I think it sets the table nicely. I would have liked to have gotten more back and forth between himself and Owens, because Owens is well able to handle himself on the microphone, especially in a slightly more unscripted scenario. But that's what we get.
Yeah, look, I have to admit, I think this is probably this whole Monday Night Messiah thing that's been going on with Seth Rollins has probably saved him from where he was going, which was probably down the card, because obviously, it didn't work on the back if they handed him two big wins over Brock Lesnar. He was not getting over with the fans. He was getting booed as of about September or October of last year. It looked like there was a lack of direction for his character. And he has been absolutely reborn. And he's also elevated the Authors of Pain and Murphy, as he's now called Murphy, as well.
Yeah. I don't know what they've got against first names in that company, but yeah, Buddy Murphy's done quite well over it. Got a tag title run with Seth. I think Buddy was well thought of. The stuff he'd done on 205 Live was really good up until that show was had the legs taken out from under it. I think the Monday Night Messiah stuff has been quite good. I think the way they've been able to elevate like the War Raiders opposite them has been fantastic. Owens has been bouncing off other people as well. That whole program has actually been pretty good. From a purely creative standpoint, I would have liked to have heard more from Owens. We'll probably get that in the final week beforehand. It'll probably be a killer from him. But yeah, nice little program. And I guess they're going to have a really enjoyable match from there. We get a recap of Charlotte Asuka from 2018. After that, for God knows why, just to remind us of the taking the balloon and popping it in terms of Asuka because they ruined her streak. Yeah. Afterwards, Charlie interviews Charlotte, who says Rhea might learn a thing or two from watching her all matches. How to botch a moonsault might be one of them. yeah, not much to that segment at all. Charlotte just wanders off with a woo.
Absolute filler.
To get us to the final segment of the night, Randy Orton comes out to answer the call of a Falls Count Anywhere challenge from Edge. I thought this was fantastic stuff from Orton. He's actually one of the most underrated talkers, I think. And for a while, I was very anti-Randy Orton because I thought he was bland. I thought he was just a bit there. He's got an RKO and he's been around for a while. He's got tenure, essentially, and that's it. But the promos was great. We got the package from Edge the week before. And then we hear from Randy last night saying, over the last few months, I've done some things and said some things that have been misunderstood. What I did came from a place of love, but has been taken as an act of brutality, an act of violence. I'm here to respond, but first I need to apologize. I lied to your wife when I said that you were a junkie for the roar of the crowd. You're not. You're a junkie for your own ego. Adam Copeland is a junkie for Edge. It's shoot name central on tonight's Raw. It's true. I never had to pay my dues. I was handed an opportunity because of who I was and my last name is. Just because of that, it doesn't guarantee a Hall of Fame career. Asks if his early championships were handed to him. He responds to the suggestion that Mick Foley passed the torch to the likes of him and Edge. Says Randy threw it back at him. I went from being a third generation prospect to the three most deadly letters in sports entertainment. And grit isn't sitting at home for 9 long years at your couch. Grit, to me, is longevity in an industry, pardon me, that seldom has any. I look around the locker room and don't see anyone that's accomplished what I have. Everything I've done is because I love you and your family, and that's why I sent you back home. Edge, you may be writing this story, but I'm going to end it. I accept. Killer.
Absolutely. Killer. The last 2 months of these two, and I know they've had a proxy in terms of using Matt Hardy towards the end of his run as part of this, and they also have Beth Phoenix come in as well. To me, this is the hottest feud that they have going into WrestleMania. It's an awful pity it's not a crowd, because the crowd reaction was huge the night that Edge got concertoed by Randy Orton. Randy Orton's been getting booed out of the building when crowds were still there after what he did to Matt Hardy as well. I think he'd be getting booed out of the building in WrestleMania if there was a crowd there. For me, rather than being Lynch and Baszler on the Saturday, I think this should be the main event on the Saturday.
Yeah, I don't think that's a bad call, because whatever you're going to have up against, I think people are going to, well, I was going to say people are going to crap all over Reigns and Goldberg. There's going to be nobody there, so they're fine. They can do what the hell they want. But yeah, this being a semi-main event to something just doesn't seem to make sense. It would seem like this is an ideal candidate to play out potentially the Saturday night. But if you're going to be fair, if you're going to go from 1 year of having women headlining WrestleMania, you can't necessarily pull back from that on a WrestleMania where you have two nights. So I can kind of see their logic in continuing on something of a tradition. But yeah, this deserves a spotlight. It's been a fantastic build. They've coped with the fact that they can't use Edge all that well. I think there's only so many times they can actually get away with that, because they're obviously going to use him for Mania and probably for something in Saudi Arabia as well, or for SummerSlam and something in Saudi Arabia. But yeah, I think they built this one perfectly, and I think it's going to be I'm not going to say a brilliant match, because you look at the age profiles of both and you look what Edge is coming back from, it's not necessarily going to be your 28 minute work rate special.
But the no DQ and the last man standing is going to help all that.
It's going to help all that. It's going to be a lot of chair shots. It's going to be a lot of rambling around the building. I just hope for Edge's sake that they take care of him. I'm sure they will.
Nah, Randy Orton's he's the safest worker in the
company. Yeah, Randy's the safest houses, but Jesus. It reminds me of, did you ever see that documentary that they did? I don't think it's on the network, where they built it around WrestleMania 19. And it's basically, the whole build of it is about how Angle's neck, of the documentary, about how Angle's neck is goosed, and if he takes one bad bump during that match with Lesnar at Safeco Field, then he's probably going to die.
Jesus.
And so then you end up watching the highlights of the match through your fingers, just going, Christ, just please, no, don't kill yourself here. This is insane. But I just hope we're not watching like that. But I think it adds a little bit of extra spice to it. You know, yeah. For those people who know, you're kind of like, much like the concerto shot, you're kind of going, oh, Jesus, if he hits that wrong, then lad's in serious trouble. Or can he really still take an RKO? Or can he still go out over the, you know, into over the barriers, etc.? So there's a nice little few questions hanging around this match, and they're all positives.
Yeah, and I think as well, you mentioned obviously how well Randy Orton has been performing. I think this is some of his best heel work in a long, long time, what he's done over the last couple of months. And what I like about this story as well is that from Randy Orton's point of view, heels always operate probably at their best when there is a certain amount of justification to what they're doing. And
they have to believe why they're doing what they're doing is right. They have to think they have to have reasoning for it in their own head. They can't just do shitty things just to be a shitty person.
Yeah, this isn't evil for the sake of being evil. He is justifying it in his own head as to, I'm doing this for the right reason. You didn't take my advice, you didn't take my help, and therefore I have to hurt you because you wouldn't take my help. Like, it's almost the perfect setup.
Yeah, I think it's absolutely fine. I think they've done a remarkable job to build a part-timer and a comeback kid and Randy Orton, because I think everybody groaned when they thought it was going to be Randy and Edge coming out of the Rumble, and everybody's like, oh, Jesus, no, really? Can you not give him someone that he's going to maybe elevate up the card or whatever? But no, this works absolutely perfectly, and they've gotten it, I think, pretty much spot on. Open to people disagreeing with us here, but I think we're in agreement here that it's been a great build.
Yeah, no, it has. What's been quite difficult as well, I think this would be an even hotter build if they had crowds around for the last couple of weeks. That brings us pretty much to the end of this edition of Raw. What do you expect out of the, effectively, what's going to be the go-home Raw next week?
Yeah, you're kind of looking through that card and you're thinking, yeah, we're probably going to get Baszler responding to Lynch. She's probably going to have to lay her out if we're going to get to any level of believability for their match. I hope we get a decent promo from Kevin Owens on the Rollins match next week. And yeah, I just hope we're able to see more action. I don't think I can put up with an hour of 5 Raw matches again on the last Raw heading into Mania. As much as I realize that they have their own issues to deal with, there are other ways around it other than just sandwiching in filler. We say as you record a wrestling podcast, we're off the ball.
I know, yeah. Well, look, a bit more wrestling is never going to be turned down. We will be back later on this week to have a look at AEW and NXT for our sins. It'll be the go-home for NXT's big show of the year as well, bizarrely enough, this week. And we'll take a look forward to SmackDown on Friday as well. It has been the very first edition of Off the Top Rope. I've been Will O'Callaghan. He's been Richie McCormack. And we'll speak to you again later this week.